Well, a very good morning to everyone. If you would be getting a Bible out and be opening it up to the Old Testament, to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel, the third chapter. And I really just need to be most insistent that you get that Bible out, especially if you're a young person, if you're old enough to read, get a Bible out and look in Daniel, the third chapter. And we're just going to work in this text all morning long. I'll make reference to some other passages, but we're just going to really work long and hard here in Daniel, the third chapter. As you're turning there and as you're getting settled in for this part of our worship, let me join in the welcome from earlier. It is great to see everybody this chilly Lord's Day morning. I saw a couple of specks of white falling from the sky as I came to the building this morning. It's my favorite time of the year. I like this time of the year. I know not everybody does, but I do, and I'm glad that I'm able to spend this good morning here with my brothers and sisters in Christ, friends and people who are interested in spiritual things. As we engage in these activities that we hope will honor and glorify God, and at the very same time it will edify and build us up as well. There's a lot to say this morning, and so I'm just going to get right to it. In Daniel chapter 3, let's read together here the first six verses to set up what we want to talk about. In Daniel 3, beginning in verse 1, the Bible says that King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace." Tell me this, young people. You go to school tomorrow morning. You walk into the classroom. What are the most dreaded words that the teacher could possibly say? What are the words that the teacher says that just causes terror to overwhelm us and fill our hearts? What are the words that the teacher says that maybe causes us to just have misery and maybe our stomach starts to churn and we just dread what they're saying? What are those magic words? Let me tell you what those words are not. It's not when the teacher comes into class and says, "All right, class, everybody load up on the bus. Today's the day of the big field trip." It's not that. We like hearing that. We love going on field trips. And maybe when you get older, you get to college age, it's not when the professor walks into the classroom and says, "All right, class, sorry to inform you, but I have a dentist appointment this afternoon. Class is canceled." No, we don't dread that. We welcome that kind of news. What are the most dreaded words in all of school? It's when the teacher walks into the classroom, and everybody's laughing and talking and cutting up. But instead of beginning just another boring lecture, the teacher says, "Clear your desk. Everything but a sheet of paper and a pencil, we're having a pop quiz." Ugh. I haven't been in a classroom in years, and that still makes my stomach just sink. It gives chalkboard chills up and down my spine just to even think about that idea. We don't like pop quizzes. We don't like surprise tests. And the reason we don't like pop quizzes and surprise tests is because many times we're just not ready for those kinds of tests. This morning I want to introduce you to three boys who had the pop test of their life. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those three friends of Daniel. Those three young men that we meet back in Daniel chapter 1 who are far from home. They are far from their families. They are captive in Babylon. They are hostages being trained for service in the royal court of the Babylonian Empire. And when we meet them in chapter 1, surprisingly we find that they are actually doing very well. They are determined not to be swept away in the culture of Babylon. They stand for what they believe in. They will not compromise on the dietary laws of the law of Moses. They stand up. They do what is right, and they are blessed. Life is good for these boys. Things are going very, very well for them. But then suddenly one day, kind of just out of the blue, bang! Like a shot in the dark, completely unexpected, this pop test, this extreme challenge to their faith arises. You worship that golden image, or you be burnt to a crisp. Fiery furnaces, folks. That is the definition of a tough test. But of course, you know this morning, I'm not asking if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego passed this test. Most of you already know how this story ends. This morning, what I am asking is, are you ready for the big test? And I am this morning especially directing that question toward our young people. Now, everybody's going to get benefit out of this. Whatever age you are, whatever place in life you find yourself in, all of us are going to benefit today. Moms and dads, grandmas and granddads, adult people who have influence. I want you to jump in here as well. I've got some things I'll say to you along the way, specifically as it comes to preparing our young people for this test. But you make no mistake about it this morning. I am painting the bullseye squarely on the backs of our young people because that's exactly where the devil has painted the bullseye. The devil knows that if he can catch our young people off guard, if he can catch them at a time when things seem to be going very, very well, all is good in life, but then suddenly a severe test gets placed in front of them, the devil knows that if he can shock them out of the blue in that way, at a time when they least expect it, he knows that he can cause them to lose their faith, for their faith to waver and be off kilter. He knows that he can trap them in sin. When young people just aren't ready for the test that comes when you choose to follow and serve Jesus the Christ. And that's really what makes this chapter just so very, very valuable for us. Daniel 3 shows us what we need to be ready for as part of this test. Daniel 3, in many ways, is a case study in the tactics of the devil. It shows us exactly, young people, what all of us can expect. And that's why this morning, for the time that we have together, I want to just explore Daniel chapter 3. Because I am not interested in being unprepared for this test. And I certainly am not interested in failing this test. Are you? I want to know what's on the test. I want to know what the devil's going to do. I want to be ready so that I can pass this test with flying colors, just like these three boys did. And the very first thing that we and young people can expect on this test is found in the very next verse. Would you look at verse 7? Verse 7, therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and they worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Let's just start right there. Let's just start with the understanding that the majority of people in this world are going to go along and get along. That's what verse 7 just showed us. In fact, did you notice that twice there in that verse it says, all the peoples. Which means, young people, number one, you can expect to be different. Now, I wish verse 7 read differently, don't you? I wish verse 7 said that the people of Moab spoke up and they said, that is not our God. Our God is Chemosh. We will not be bowing down to your image, Nebuchadnezzar. But verse 7 doesn't say that. I wish verse 7 said that the University of Babylon, they dispatched their scientists and their philosophers who tested the image and they announced to everyone that it had no special powers of any kind. It was just a piece of metal. But verse 7 doesn't say that either. I wish verse 7 said That everybody in unison, all with one voice, joined their voices together and said, "Are you kidding me? It's just a statue. It's a big dumb hunk of metal. We're not bowing down to that." But verse 7 doesn't say that either. What verse 7 says is that people bowed down to a big piece of metal because they were told to do that, and then they did what everybody else around them was doing. They fit in with the majority. And I want you to understand that that's still going on today. We need to understand some things, young people, about the crowd mentality. Now, somebody's probably thinking right about now, "Josh, don't you know Nebuchadnezzar, he was threatening to kill anybody who didn't bow down to the image." And I am certainly aware of that. But I wonder if threatening people with physical death, I wonder if that was even necessary on Nebuchadnezzar's part. Because generally speaking, people don't like to stick out. People don't like to be different from the crowd. Most people's natural inclination is to do what? Is to conform. To just blend in with the crowd. To go along and to get along. Did you ever hear the story about the college professor who he rigged this little social experiment with his class to help them try and learn some things about the pressures of conformity? The professor, he took two sticks at the end of the afternoon's lecture. He took a really, really short stick. And then he took a really, really long stick. And he held them up in front of his class and said, "All right, class, tomorrow, come back in here, we're going to take a vote as to which of these two is the longer stick." Now, probably most of the kids in that class were thinking, "I think we can go ahead and vote on that right now. It seems pretty obvious." Well, the catch was, before class the next day, the professor secretly got about half of the students and he took them to the side. And he told them, "All right, when I ask about the sticks, I want you all to agree that the obviously short stick is actually the longer one." So he gets about half the students and he has them all agree that they're going to vote for the obviously wrong answer. And so everybody comes into class that day, those that are in the know and then the rest who are not in the know. And the professor holds up these sticks and he says, "All right, which of these two is the larger stick?" And he holds up this teeny tiny little stick over here. And of course, all those people that he talked to before class, they immediately shot their hand up. And they said, "Yep, that is the larger stick." And you guess what happened next? Slowly but surely, it took a little bit of time. Slowly but surely, everybody in the class raised their hand. Until all of the kids had raised their hand voting for the obviously wrong answer. Boy, stories like that sure do give me a lot of confidence in how we select our elected officials, doesn't it, you? But you know what? That's just kind of the way things are. That by and large, people just want to fit in with what the majority is doing. I mean, after all, who wants to stick out like a sore thumb? Who wants to be the outcast in those scenarios? You just put yourself in Daniel chapter 3. Put yourself in that environment. Where thousands upon thousands of people, they are assembled in front of this big metal statue. And then the music sounds. And just in waves, people are bowing down, bowing down, bowing down for as far as the eye can see. Everybody has their face pressed to the ground, worshiping this big statue. And then there's like just one guy. He's just kind of standing there, just kind of looking around, not doing what everybody else is doing. Obviously, not conforming like the rest of the people. Daring to be different from the rest. Do you want to be that one guy? Well, I want to tell you something. If you want to serve Jesus Christ, if you want to go to heaven when you die, that is exactly what you must do. You must be that one guy in the crowd. Step out of Daniel for just a moment. Look at Romans chapter 12, please. In Romans chapter 12, the Apostle Paul, he gives us the scoop on what it means to live as a faithful child of God. In Romans 12, and in verse 1, Paul says, "I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, But be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Do you know what Romans 12 is saying, young people? Romans 12 is me saying, I don't let the world call the shots in my life. I don't let my classmates and my friends call the shots in my life. I don't let the television or what I see on the internet, I don't let that call the shots in my life. I have changed my mind. Jesus Christ is sitting in the driver's seat. God the Father, His book, that is who controls my life. Which means, when you do that, now that means you're going to be different. That I am going to stick out. That I am not always going to fit in with the crowd. Now normally whenever we talk about this with young people, what we say to them is we say, you know, the majority of people in the world, they're doing wrong. And of course you can't run around with the crowd. And we are very capable, we are very ready to talk with them about things from Matthew chapter 7, about the narrow way and the broad way. Those of you that were in my class this morning, we talked about the narrow way and the broad way, didn't we? And we talk about how if you go along with the majority, you get on the Broadway, well, that's a really good recipe for going to hell. And you know what? We ought to emphasize those things. Those are important points that need to be made. But I want to take it a step further. I want to say something more than that. I want to tell our young people in just no uncertain terms that being different from the world, it's hard. It is. It's difficult. And I believe that anybody who tells you otherwise is a liar. Being different means that you will be seen as odd, maybe even as weird in some ways. Do you understand about that? Do you understand how you will be perceived by most people? It means that you will, from time to time, you're going to be left out of things that look like they're fun things to do. It means as well that you will be that one guy who's standing up when everybody else is bowed down to the false gods of this world. And it means as well that you will not be treated very kindly by the rest of this world. In fact, Jesus has already warned us up front about how the world treats those who would follow Him in John 15. In John 15, what do you get when you march to the beat of a different drummer? Well, Jesus tells us in John 15 and in verse 18. In John 15, verse 18, if the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Jesus uses one of the strongest words in our English language to describe how the world will treat His followers. They will hate you. And that is not fun to think about, is it? It's not pleasant. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's really just quite depressing. And that is something that sometimes, mom and dads, we try to hide our kids from. We try to shield them from that reality. We don't want them to know about all of that. We don't want them to know about the harsh difficulties of serving God in a godless world. But I want to tell you something. If you don't know about that, if you're not prepared for those hardships that come from being different, then what will end up happening is you'll end up being a closet Christian. You understand what I mean by that? I'm talking about the kind of people who make really fine disciples on a Sunday morning. We come to church, we're all dressed up, we've got our Bibles in tow, we look like we've got it all together. But then come Monday, when the devil says, hunker down, or you're going to lose points with the in crowd and the cool kids, those are the ones whose faces are buried in the sand. And those are the same young disciples who grow up to become older disciples, who then begin to rationalize all the courtesy bows that they give maybe to the god of business or to the god of pleasure or the god of sports or the god of recreation or the god of popularity, because they never came to grips with the truth early on that there is a price to pay to follow Jesus. And part of that price is that from time to time we will stand out. We will be unlike the masses. That we will not talk like, act like, think like, dress like, do like the sinful world around us. We will be seen as different. Count on it. And Daniel 3 says that young people can expect it. And take a look at what happens whenever you stand out. Go back to Daniel chapter 3. Let's try a little bit more. Pick up in verse 8 now. When you're different, here's what comes along with that. Daniel 3 verse 8. Therefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward, and they maliciously accused the Jews. They maliciously accused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, you've made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, that they should fall down and worship the golden image. And that whoever does not fall down and worship, that they should be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, they pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. What a bunch of weasels! These Chaldean guys, these are nothing but a bunch of pot stirrers, a bunch of tattletales. They're just manipulating the king with their words just so they can get Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into trouble. And you know what that says to me? That says to me that all the time, folks are watching the people of God. This story illustrates, young people, that as part of this test, you can expect to be watched. That people are watching you. And they are watching you not with good intent. They are watching to see whether your faith is genuine or whether it's fake. They are watching to see if you're going to mess it up. They're watching your life to see if your talk matches your life's walk. They want to know, are you a real disciple like you claim to be? That's what they're looking. That's what they are looking to find out as they watch you. And I want you to understand, they are looking. They're looking all the time. In fact, Jesus tells us why they're looking. Would you look over in John, please, for a moment? In John chapter 3, Jesus gives us a little bit of understanding, a little bit of insight as to why people are just so interested in the people of God. Why are folks watching us so closely? John 3 verse 19, Jesus says there, John 3 19, that this is the judgment, that light has come into the world, and people love the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his work should be exposed. There it is. They hate it. They hate that our lifestyle, as we walk in the light, they hate that the way that we live exposes the emptiness and the folly and the futility of the way that they are living. Because they want to believe, and in fact they tell themselves in their heart of hearts, that nobody can be pure in this kind of impure and immoral world. They tell themselves that nobody can possibly stand up to all the peer pressure. Nobody today really takes the Bible or God or church seriously anymore. I mean, come on, it just can't be done. And then there you are. You're doing it. You really are. You're living out true, genuine New Testament Christianity. And you know what? They hate that. And so they're going to watch you. They're going to watch you all the more closely. Because they just don't think that it could possibly be true. And they're going to watch you like a hawk in hopes that you turn out to be nothing more than a big, fat phony. You know what? I think that makes us uncomfortable, doesn't it? That makes us very uncomfortable, particularly if you are a young person. And maybe it makes us uncomfortable because, well, what we would like is we would like to be able to live our lives just in a very anonymous sort of way. To think that nobody's paying attention to us. I can just do what I want and it won't affect others. We don't want to have to think about influence. How our actions or our words might actually influence others for good or for bad. We don't like that. We don't like people looking at our lives and making judgments about Jesus and about New Testament Christianity. Wise up. Wise up, young people. Jesus said in Matthew 5 verses 13 and 6, 13 through 16, that you are salt and light. That whether you like it or not, you do have an influence on others around you. And if you're thinking that somehow you get a pass on that just because you're a young person, Daniel 3 absolutely completely squashes that notion. Daniel 3 helps us to see that people are looking. People are looking at young folks. People are looking at God's people. People want to know, is it real? Is it genuine what they profess and what they say? And so the music played. And thousands upon thousands upon thousands bowed down, Daniel 3 tells us. But those Chaldean guys, even as they bowed down, they really weren't thinking about the big metal statue over there. In fact, out of the corner of their eye, I imagine they were kind of watching. Boy, what's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego going to do? What about those guys? We hear the music, we're all bowed down. What are those guys going to do? You know, they talk a real good game over there. They talk about how they don't eat the king's meat, how they don't defile themselves with the king's wine and that sort of thing. They say they follow Jehovah, the true and living God of heaven. Are they going to stick to their guns now? Look, look, look! They're not bowing down. They really aren't bowing down. I can remember when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, when I got to middle school and high school age, there would be occasions that I get invitations to a party, some kind of a gathering where other youngsters would be. And I get those invitations knowing that there'd be things going on at those parties that I didn't need to be around, I didn't need to have any part of. Parties where I knew there'd be drinking, be dancing, maybe be promiscuity, sexual immorality going on. And I would respond to those invitations pretty much the same all the time. I'd say, I appreciate it, but no, I'm not going to come. I don't do those kinds of things. And the immediate response would be, we know. We know, Josh. We were just checking. But then on the flip side of that, I have also heard the anguished voice of young people who went. They did go. Just once. Just that one time. Just to check it out. I mean, come on. What could it possibly hurt just to go that one time? You know, just for a moment they were involved. It was just one little sip, don't you know? They went along with the crowd just for that one moment in time. And as they were there in that midst of ungodliness and wickedness, they felt the hard eyes of people watching them. And the eyes and the looks of those people told the story. The look said, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're not so different after all, are you? Daniel 3 reminds us that even when we think nobody's looking, they're looking. They are watching you to see if your faith is real and true. Read a little bit more though in Daniel chapter 3. What happens when you're different, when you don't bow down? And what happens when people are watching and they notice that? Well, let's pick up the reading, verse 13 now. In verse 13 of Daniel chapter 3, then Nebuchadnezzar, in a furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought to him. So they brought these men before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true? Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music to fall down and to worship the image that I have made, then well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands now? You understand right now that when you don't go along and get along, and when people are watching and they see that, the result of that is going to be extreme pressure. Extreme pressure for you to go along and to do what is wrong. Daniel 3 shows us that part of this test, you can expect to be pressured. I want you to please notice very carefully that Nebuchadnezzar does not say in verse 15, well, oh my, this is a little awkward. This is quite unexpected. You know, I didn't anticipate maybe somebody would not bow down to my statue today. But you know what, boys? I sure do respect you for your convictions. Verse 15 doesn't say that at all. In fact, how many times have we told our young people that very thing? That if you just stand up for the Lord all the time, if you just always do what's right, people will always respect you for your beliefs. Can we stop that? Can we just please quit saying that? That needs to be retired with all the other big lies that people tell. You know all the big lies people say? Lies like, the check is in the mail. Or, you know, I'm sorry I can't come, but I've got other things I'm doing tonight. Or, I got my red hair from the mailman. You know, all the lies that people say. We're always wanting to tell our young people that very same lie. Just stand up for the Lord all the time. That everybody's going to see that, and they're just going to be so impressed with you. They're going to be impressed with your courage and your convictions for the Lord. But I tell you what, young people, if you really believe that, if you really believe that that is how things work, when you get out into the real world, you will be let down. You will be sorely disappointed. Nebuchadnezzar is not impressed with these young men. What Nebuchadnezzar is thinking, what those Chaldean guys are thinking, what everybody was probably thinking is, these boys are morons. They're idiots. They are fools. What kind of person dies horribly, roasted to death in a burning fiery furnace over something so minor, something that is so simple? Just bow down to the statue. I mean, come on, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Did you not get the memo the first time? Okay, boys, if you're maybe a little slow on the draw, then we're going to go through this one more time because we're doing it, and we're doing it right now. And young people, you need to understand that it will be exactly the same for you in this wicked and perverse world that we live in today. If you choose to follow Jesus Christ, you can expect the same kind of pressure. You will know the wrath. You will know the hostility of people that you thought were on your side. People that you thought were actually your friends. You will be punished. You will be mocked. You will be lied about. In fact, did you notice that here in our text, back up in verse 8 and then in verse 12 again? They said, oh, these guys, they don't even pay attention to you, O king. It wasn't true. That wasn't true at all. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were amongst the very best officials that Nebuchadnezzar had. You see, you can be slandered. All of this is to say is that again and again and again you will find yourself standing with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being hurt, being ridiculed, being attacked because you made the decision to serve Jesus Christ. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, in 2 Timothy chapter 3, the Apostle Paul, I think probably really speaking from some first-hand experience, he says in verse 12, here's a verse that probably we're starting to maybe see more and more in the world in which we live today. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12, Paul says there, indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. That's what's going to happen. That is a fact of life. That's going to happen. The devil will use every trick in his arsenal to get you to throw in the towel. He will persecute you, he will tempt you, he will squeeze you so that you will cave in to the intense pressure. And through many different channels and methods and means, he will try to convince you to believe one of his lies. And as the father of lies, all the devil's just got plenty of lies to tell you. Maybe he'll tell you first of all, maybe he'll tell you, oh yeah, just go ahead. Do it just that one time. Everybody's doing it. Everybody needs to sow their wild oats while they're young. But of course, maybe our young people, maybe they're too wise for that. Maybe we won't fall for that lie. No, the devil doesn't stop there. He'll just crank up the dial a little more. Because if that first lie doesn't work, maybe what he'll do next is maybe he'll send people into your life who will say things like, if you don't drink this, if you don't smoke this, if you don't go watch this movie with us, if you don't sleep with this person, then we're not your friend anymore. And in that day, all those trite little expressions that mom and dad say like, well, if they say that, then they really weren't your friends anyway. That's not going to help, is it? And of course, maybe our young people are too smart for that. Maybe we're wise to that. If that doesn't work, just keep turning that heat up a little more. Maybe he'll just blind your eyes to the ugliness of sin and wickedness. Maybe instead of showing you the car crash with dead bodies laying on the road caused by alcohol consumption, what they'll show you instead is those commercials of people laughing and playing and having a good time and strolling around on the beach. Oh yeah, drinking just looks like the funnest thing in the world. Maybe you're too smart for that though. The devil's not done. He'll turn up that even one more notch. Maybe what He'll do next is maybe He'll start bringing pain, suffering into your life. Maybe it'll be some sickness or some disease. Maybe it'll be the death of a loved one in your life. He'll do something that will cause you to start having some doubts about the Lord. Hey, you know, all this bad stuff's happening in my... Does God care about me? Does the Lord even know what's going on in my life? Why would God allow this to happen? In fact, come to think of it, does God even exist? The devil will tempt you and he'll come at you from every possible angle to get you to realize that, you know what, it is a whole lot easier to bow down to that golden image than it is to be the lead marshmallow in the king's marshmallow roast. Now, right about now, somebody's probably thinking to themselves, man, Josh, you're spouting all kinds of gloom and doom. Almost sounds like our young people just don't even stand a chance out there. It almost sounds like the pressure of this world is too great, it's too severe, it's so overwhelming that our young people, they're just doomed to fail. But as the children of God, I want you to understand, we have a different perspective on things. We have a distinct advantage, an ace in the hole, if you will. In 1 Corinthians 10 and in verse 13, if you're a young person, you have a Bible in your lap right now, I want you to turn to 1 Corinthians 10, 13. In fact, I'm really hoping most of you know this passage already. If you don't know this passage, you need to know it. You need to read it, you need to memorize it, put it deep in your heart, you need to live this passage. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the Bible tells us that despite the intense pressure that the world puts upon us, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation He will provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. Paul says that our great and merciful God, He will not allow His children, His followers, to be pressured and squeezed beyond their limitations. Because in the face of temptation, God provides a way out. In the face of tribulation and difficulty, God provides endurance. What it says to me, is that it says to me that you can withstand the pressure. Now, I'm here to tell you this morning that when you're the one staring into the fiery furnace, you'll never do any better than what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did right there in Daniel 3. Do you know how they handled that pressure? Read with me in verse 16, Daniel 3, verse 16. What was their response? Verse 16, Daniel 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they answered and they said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. I love those verses. I love everything about those verses. And maybe what I love about those verses the most is that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they refuse to reason from consequences, and instead they reason from conviction. You do whatever you want to do to us, king. It doesn't matter. We don't care. We don't care what you throw us into that fiery furnace. Fine. Put us into a lion's den, fine. We don't care what you do to us. Because we know that big metal statue out there in that field, that's not God. And we're not going to bow down to it. We're not going to serve you. Not going to serve anything other than the true and the living God. We serve Jehovah. And you know what? Young and old alike need to be ready to say the exact same thing. That you do whatever you want to us. You be mean to us, that's fine. You be ugly to us, that's fine too. You want to be hostile to us, that's fine. If some terrorist wants to march into this building and threaten to chop our heads off if we don't renounce Jesus Christ, that's fine. It doesn't matter. Because we serve Jesus Christ. We will not do what is wrong. We will not compromise on what we know is right. We will not sin and turn against God. We need the courage to stand on convictions. Instead of just blowing in the ever-changing winds of popular opinion. I don't know what the cool things are these days. I'm kind of past that stage. I don't get to stay up with all the things that are cool and hip. Young people, don't get swept up in whatever the current fads and trends are. Dad, stand. Stand strong. Don't cave into the pressure. But you know what? Daniel chapter 3 doesn't end there. I sure don't want us to miss this. Go back to Daniel 3. Because the story does not end in verse 18. I absolutely want to make sure that we see what happens when these three boys pass this test. Daniel 3, verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar, he was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so he ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then they were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. And because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished. And he rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast 3 men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, But I see 4 men unbound, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the 4th is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. And he declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out. And come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors, they gathered together. And they saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of these men. The hair of their heads was not singed. Their cloaks were not harmed. And no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel and delivered His servants, who trusted in Him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than to serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Please, please, please don't miss this. I'm afraid that all too often we're telling our young people just how tough it is in this wicked world. And that they can expect all sorts of bad things in this world. And we're putting up all sorts of charts and statistics to show how many people are doing bad things in this world. And we just forget. In the middle of all that, we forget to tell our young people that when you pass this test, you can expect one more thing. That you can expect to receive glory. And that is the end of the story, isn't it? And our young people need to understand that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And that that light is glory. Now I want you to please understand that I am not saying that means that things are always going to go well here. Granted, sometimes things do turn out the way it did for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And you don't end up as a human shish kebab and you kind of get to become a hero. I get that. For example, there are Christians who reported cheating that was going on in their company and they were promoted because of their honesty and their integrity. And there are young Christians as well who said to their coach, "Coach, I can't come to that practice. I can't make it to that game. I've got Bible study that night. I've got worship services that night." And the coach admired them. They admired their faith and their beliefs and they rearranged things to better suit their schedule. Those kinds of good things and good, happy endings, they do happen from time to time where Christians are rewarded for their convictions. But you need to know as well that there are Christians who reported cheating in the company and they weren't promoted. They were fired. And there are young Christians who say to their coach, "Coach, I can't come to that game. I can't come to that practice because I've got Bible study that evening." They lost their spot on the team. And you need to know as well that in the time of the New Testament, Nero, he rode through his gardens at night. And his gardens were lit up with torches. Human torches. Torches made from the bodies of Christians who would not denounce their faith in Jesus as Lord. So I hope you understand, we're not seeking after some kind of earthly glory. No. No, we know better than that. What we're looking for, what we're striving for, what we're reaching for is something much, much grander. We are pressing for something far beyond the here and the now. And as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego so bravely demonstrate, what we are pressing for is an eternal glory. I hope you realize that what this means is that Daniel 3 is really good news. I mean, come on. If these boys could stand up to that kind of pressure, What can you and I not stand up to? You know, I recognize that it is very uncomfortable to be ridiculed in the halls of school day after day after day, but somehow comparing ridicule for 4 years to a burning fiery furnace, that just doesn't quite measure up. It's not quite the same thing. If these guys could keep it together in this situation, what can you and I not do? Daniel 3 says you can stand. Daniel 3 says you can muster the courage. Daniel 3 says you don't have to go along and get along. I get so tired of hearing teenagers make excuses about why everybody was doing it, so they just felt like they needed to do it as well. And I get even more tired of parents who make excuses for their teenagers as to why they let them go along. Daniel 3 says, stand up. You can do it. You can do it when you expect glory. When you have the hope, the dream, the aspiration of something much grander, something that is much better than this terrible, awful world has to offer. And in fact, that is the connection that the New Testament makes over and over and over again. And all too often, I'm afraid that I've missed that. I think maybe just we in general have missed that. That yes, there is suffering and there is difficulty as a saint. But that suffering and that difficulty, it is linked to glory. A couple of passages very quickly in the New Testament. Romans chapter 8, the Apostle Paul gives this wonderful affirmation that we are the children of God. And you know Paul, don't you? He's that guy who got shipwrecked, he got beat up, got left for dead, got bitten by a snake. Look at what this guy said in Romans chapter 8 and in verse 17. Paul says that if we are children, then we are heirs. Heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ. Provided that we suffer with Him in order that we may also be glorified with Him. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time, they're not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us. Do you see how one thing leads to the other? How suffering as a Christian, it leads to glory? One final passage in Revelation chapter 2. In Revelation chapter 2, please, to brothers and sisters in Christ who were very genuinely being persecuted. Christians who knew what it meant to die for their faith. Jesus said to those suffering saints in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10, He says, be faithful unto death. Be faithful to death. Suffer a whole lot. It's just going to be awful and miserable. Is that how your Bible reads? No, that's not the end of that sentence. You be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. And that's what we need to say. That yes, we are serving Jesus Christ. And yes, that means that we are serving Jesus Christ, and many times we're going to be suffering while we do that. But we're not doing that just because we've got nothing better to do. We're just a bunch of naive people. We're foolish and we're stupid in some way. No, we are serving and we are suffering because we know that the end of serving and suffering is eternal glory. That a day comes when all of the enemies, all of the opponents of Jesus Christ, their mouths absolutely stop. Because on that day, they will realize the futility and the folly of their wicked ways. Which means that those of us who find our place on the side of Jesus, we will be vindicated. We will be vindicated on that great day. And we will reign with Christ and we will wear those crowns of eternal life. And that is our hope, isn't it? That even though we suffer, we will not suffer forever. And that means that we do rejoice. Because we know that if we are counted worthy to suffer for His name's sake, that just means we're bound for glory. And so we sing in that grand old hymn, on Zion's glorious summit stood a numerous host redeemed by blood. They hymned their King in strains divine. I heard the song and I strove to join. Hear all who suffer sword or flame. For truth, for Jesus' lovely name. They shout victory now, and they hail the Lamb, and they bow before the great I Am. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're shouting victory, aren't they? They pass that pop test with flying colors. And I want to pass it too. I want to be able to shout victory. I want to hail the Lamb. I will not bow down to King Nebuchadnezzar or anybody else's golden statue. I will bow before the great I Am. And that means I understand that yes, things are going to get bumpy from time to time here. Things are going to be tough here. On occasions, things will be very, very difficult. In fact, I am expecting the very worst that the devil can do. But I'm ready. I am ready for this test. And even more so, I am ready for what God gives His faithful children. I am ready for eternal glory. How about you this morning? You ready for that? Are you ready? Are you prepared to receive eternal glory? We're going to sing a song in just a moment. That song's an invitation song. And really what that song is doing is it's going to invite you, it's going to encourage you to come on over to the winning side. To be with the victors. That's what this song is going to be all about. Don't be fooled. Satan makes it look, he makes it look all the time, like he's winning this war. That's the way you turn on your evening news, you fire up your internet browser, it just looks like the devil is winning this spiritual war. You look out your front door, you see people on a day to day. You may even have friends who are on the devil's side, they are in his army. And that'll make it very, very tempting for you to think, yeah, maybe that's where I need to be as well. Maybe I need to be on that team. That just seems like the way to go. Don't be tricked. Don't be fooled. I've read this story, and I already know how it ends. In the end, Satan loses. And anybody on his team, they're going to lose too. Jesus Christ reigns supreme. Don't you want to be standing on the side of the victors? Don't you want to be shouting victory? All hail the Lamb, bowing before the great I Am. You need to become a Christian this morning. This invitation is for you. It's an opportunity for you to come forward and to confess your faith in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and to turn from sin and to be baptized, to have your sins washed away, to become part of God's family, to be enlisted in His army, be on the side of the victors. Can we help you to do that today? Brother or sister, if you're not living faithful, this invitation's for you as well. It may be that you were once on the Lord's side, you decided to switch camps and you went back to the devil's side. You need to stop that. You need to repent. You need to make a change today. Get back on the Lord's side. If we can pray with you and encourage you to help you to be a better servant of the Lord, this invitation is yours as well. If anyone this morning is subject to the invitation of Jesus Christ, this is your time to get ready. Do it. Do it right now while we stand and while we sing.